Okay, continue at ninth purport. The divine origin of the cow. As men are made after the form and features of the Supreme Lord, so also the cows are made after the form and features of the Sarabi cows in the spiritual kingdom. In the material world, the human society gives all protection to the human being, but there is no law to protect the denizens, descendants of Sarabi, who can give all protection to men by supplying the miracle food, milk. But Maharaj Parikit and the Pandavas were fully conscious of the importance of the cow and bull, and they were prepared to punish the cow killer with all chastisement, including death. Yeah. So it's just that the members of the Vedic culture understand the importance of the cow, because this milk is something quite special. We generally take it as, you know, pretty ordinary. You know, it's just there, it's milk. But the milk from the cow, then that is the things that it's used for, one's own personal health, one's own personal development. It's developed. Prabhupada mentions three things that develop finer brain tissues: chanting Hare Krishna, milk, and aesthetics. Right? There may be more. I've only come across these three. You know, so if the atmosphere that you live in is very nice, and you drink milk and you chant Hare Krishna, these three, then refine the brain tissues. So refined brain tissues are good, because you were able to then understand the subtleties of of transcendence. Right? Does that make sense? Because human life is meant for this transcendental upliftment. So that's why that's the most important. For material activities day to day, that doesn't require so much brain. Therefore, the modern scientists say only use 1/10 of your brain, because 9/10 is meant for spiritual life, like that. But because that's what a human being's meant for. But you know, they're not able to understand these things. So that other 9/10 is developed by milk, by chanting, and by living in a place that looks very nice, like that. Therefore, because of its importance, then the leaders want to establish that the cows are nicely taken care of and they're happy. When they're happy, they give milk. Right? Okay. Any questions on this? No. So the point that how Prabhupada is using is because man is important because they're reflected from God. But the cows are important because they reflect from the Sarabi cows. Right? So they're also part of Krishna's a cowherd. So they're important to him. So they should be important to those who are reflecting from him here. He takes care of the cows there. So it should be the humans here take care of the cows here. Okay? 10 and 11 purport. The praja, or protected citizens of the Vedic king. When there is some disturbance caused by wild animals in a village or town, the police or others take action to kill them. Similarly, it is the duty of the government to kill at once all bad social elements, such as thieves, dacoits, and murderers. The same punishment is also due to animal killers, because the animals of the state are also the praja. Praja means one who has taken birth in the state. And this includes both men and animals. Any living being who takes birth in a state has the primary right to live under the protection of the king. Jungle animals are also subject to the king, and they also have a right to live. So what to speak of domestic animals like the cows and bulls? Any living being, if he terrifies other living beings, is a most wretched subject, and the king should at once kill such a disturbing element, as a wild animal is killed when it creates disturbances. Similarly, any man who unnecessarily kills or terrifies the jungle animals or other animals must be punished at once. By the law of the Supreme Lord, all living beings, in whatever shape they may be, are the sons of the Lord, and no one has any right to kill another animal unless it is so ordered by the codes of natural law. The tiger can kill a lower animal for its subsistence, but a man cannot kill an animal for his subsistence. That is the law of God, who has created the law that a living being subsists by eating another living being. Thus, the vegetarians are also living by eating other living beings. Therefore, the law is that one should live only by eating specific living beings, as ordained by the law of God. The Upanishad directs that one should live by the direction of the Lord and not at one's sweet will. A man can subsist on varieties of grains, fruits, and milk obtained by God. And there is no need of animal food save and except in particular cases. So the point that's being made is sometimes we'll take that vegetarianism is special. And then sometimes we'll find that even devotees are very satisfied in their preaching they made someone a vegetarian. Right? They didn't chant, they didn't learn about Krishna, they just became nice people who were vegetarian. So it's not given as such importance. Because that's not the point. It's not that vegetarian is good, non-vegetarian is bad. The point is that every living entity has its quota of what is its food. And if a living entity eats its food, there's nothing wrong. So example is given, the tiger is killing other animals and eating them, but that's its food. But if it kills a human being, then that's not its food. So then it'll be killed. Does that make sense? So the food that's given to human beings is vegetables, milk, grains, sugar. This is what's given to human beings. That's their food. They eat it, there'll be no sin. Right? They may not go back to Godhead, but there'll be no sin. You understand? So that's the thing, because that's the quota given to humans. So when humans then eat animals, they're going outside their quota. Therefore, they must be corrected. Does that make sense? Because otherwise they're eating, you're going out and eating somebody else's food. Right? Just like a beggar can only go begging once. Right? You can't go twice in a day begging because then you're taking from someone else's quota. Right? Everyone sets aside a little bit, okay, this much we're giving to the beggars. So if you come twice, they have food for two beggars, you come twice, then you get it. It should be you're getting one part, someone else is getting another. Does that make sense? So quota is there. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the point. So it says... So the law is that... Okay. Here. By the law of the Supreme Lord, all living beings in whatever shape they may be are the sons of the Lord, and no one has any right to kill another animal unless it is so ordered by the codes of natural law. So the natural law is no one can kill anybody else unless that's the law. So the law is the cows eat the grass, you know, like this. So it's the verse is basically those with two legs eat those with four legs, those with claws eat those without claws, and those who are strong eat those who are weak. Does that make sense? So that's basically, there's laws set up like that. Now, if there is some specific sacrifice, animals may be killed in that sacrifice, right? Because it's ordained, but it can't be killed to maintain oneself. Does that make sense? To maintain yourself, animals, but in a sacrifice, then they're killed because the animal is benefited. You do the sacrifice, you clear the animal of all its karma that keeps it as an animal, right? The natural position of a soul in the material world is that of human being, right? And cultured human being, meaning ones who follows the Varnashram and knows the Vedic literatures. Right? One who is trying to uplift himself. That's the natural state of the soul in the material world. Due to sinful activity, then they take birth within lower species. Does that make sense? So being in the lower species is not actually the natural position. So when you perform a yajna, where an animal is sacrificed, whatever is the sin that is keeping them from being in their natural position of being a human being, that is all cleared. Right? That's why if you just kill the animal and eat it, then only you're getting benefit and the animal's not. That's not fair. It has to be fair. You're getting benefit, they're getting benefit. So you're getting the benefit of this, they're getting the benefit of that. Right? So therefore only in sacrifice. But in sacrifice, there's no sacrifice where you just kill animals to eat them. So it's got to be that you're not maintaining yourself, you're uplifting yourself. Does that make sense? You're going to the heavenly planets. And the animal then gets elevated to human form of life. Right? So then both are elevated. The animal goes to heaven, you go to heaven. Right? Does that make sense? So that's allowed, but not in the Kali Yuga. So no age, then they kill animals just to maintain themselves. Right? That's not considered proper. Right? So it's only for elevation of both the animal and the human being who's performing the sacrifice. This age is not allowed. So therefore, then vegetarian is just the standard. If you want to go back to Godhead, you also maintain the vegetarian diet, because the other is only in sacrifice. Those are for going to heavenly planets. We're not interested in that. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point. But the emphasis is put on that because people are so accustomed and habituated to animal killing that if there seems to be any way of this, any laxity on it, then that's taken as yes. Does that make sense? If you want something, if I just say, no, 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 jump up and down, yell and scream and this and that, okay, well, maybe it's not good. But in my mind, it's still, the possibility is still there, but I'm not getting an opportunity. Then if you say, well, actually, it's not good, you know, this, oh, that means it's not good, but you could do it. Understand? That's how the mind works. If you want something, no means maybe. Right? Yes.
They used to do animal sacrifice. Did they used to eat the special after animal?
Yes. The priests and the yajaman had to eat something from the animal because that's the part that I didn't explain before. We said the animal is cleared of all the sins that keeps it as an animal and immediately elevated the human species. So all that sin by eating the animal goes to the priest and the yajaman. Somebody has to take it. You know, it's just like you have a debt. I can clear you of the debt by taking the debt myself.
But they would just take it for that purpose in that room and take a tiny bit.
Yeah, like that. It's not that they would be eating, you know, for, you know, like that. But they would have to eat something from the animal because that's how they got the karma.
If they consider that the animal sacrifice is a path for Treta Yuga,
is a path for Treta Yuga. No. Sacrifice is the path. So, but within sacrifice, then generally it would be preferred as the Karmakanda. Like that. But you could also do sacrifice to Vishnu. Because the point is in the sacrifice, even you want to use that as a medium, still Vishnu's the main deity. Like you see at the Rajasuya, the most senior person in the assembly had to be worshipped. So that could always be Vishnu. You know, so there's always the element that's there. But most important thing in the sacrifice is that what's important is that who's invited to the sacrifice. All the sadhyas shishtas like this, then if they're improperly, you are trying to get those who are devotional, those who are devotees, so then the discussions will be devotional. The Bhagavatam, this is the discussions between the actual ritualistic aspects of the sacrifice, you know, that's taking place. The sacrifice means performing the yajna and discussing shastra, right? In other words, the yajna, you do something in the morning, do something in the evening, maybe there's something in the noon. But between those times, you're supposed to be discussing shastra. So that's the complete picture of the shastra, of the yajna. So we see the sages at Naimisharanya are doing a yajna, right? And then the sages at Naimisharanya are discussing Srimad Bhagavatam. Or previously they were discussing Mahabharata. Previous to that they were discussing all the shastras generally are always Suta Goswami speaking to Saunaka Rishi. Because they're doing they were doing 10,000 year yajna, so they got plenty of time, right? And Shoneka Rishi is a very senior person, so he asked very good questions, right? And his sages are very interested in such topic matters, right? You don't hear Suta Goswami telling them, hey, you guys stay awake or I'm not, you know, talking anymore. Right? So it's the ideal situation to speak all these scriptures. Right? And Suta Goswami is the perfect person to speak them. So basically, all the Vedic, all these, how you say, the Puranas, are all spoken by Suta Goswami at Naimisharanya to the sages there. Like that. That makes sense. Yeah.
Animal sacrifice is kind of violence, so if to compare.
Yeah, animal sacrifice is violence. That's why people, if they're really intelligent, they don't indulge in it. In other words, it's like this. You can there's a difference. We generally take sin and reaction to go together. So there is a reaction for sin, but there's a reaction for everything that you do. You know what I'm saying? In other words, you've killed the animal, and you have done that according to the rules of sacrifice. So you get elevated to the heavenly planets. The animal gets elevated to the heavenly planets. So it all looks good there. So Karmakanda only talks about that much. Because it can't really talk about more than that. Because the materialistic person wants material benefits. So here's how they're going to get it. So if you discourage them from it, they'll look anyway to material benefit, but not according to Scripture. So therefore, it's not that the Scriptures mislead you, they just don't tell you everything. Because your mentality, you don't want to hear it anyway. Right? You know, like, let's say somebody has lost something very dear to them. And they go on talking as if they're there and interacting like they're there. You can tell them that they're gone, but it won't help. So you just leave it. So since they're mad, they're babbling on to the lost relative, you know, their Aunt Tessie, you know, with the blue hair, and, you know, sitting there, and, you know, at the, you know, breakfast table, and she's not there, and, you know, so you just leave it, you know, because there's no benefit in not. So like that, the Karmakandi is so absorbed in benefit that they don't notice otherwise. So you find in the Dharma Shastras or the Upanishads, these literatures, they will tell you more about it. Because that's for the path of you don't want to be involved in karma. Therefore, the other scriptures will tell you this point that the karma goes to you from the animal. Karmakanda won't. Does that make sense? So the point is the animal is being killed. So you are elevating them and yourself. Because you've done it that way, then what Maharaj mentioned yesterday is that if you kill a cow, then for every hair on, not even a cow, but any animal, for every hair on their body, that many times you'd have to take birth and be killed. Right? So it's a cow or it's a goat or whatever it is, then, you know, a horse, you know, there's a lot of hairs on horses and cows, you know. They're quite big. On a human head, there's about an average of about 100,000 hairs. Right? So you can imagine if you take that, it's a spot about that big. And then, so how many of those are on a cow? You know, you're probably talking about millions of hairs. You know, it's a lot of hairs. You know? Like that. So, yeah, maybe like a million hairs or something, but it's a lot of hairs. So, you understand? That's the reaction. But if you've done according to the sacrifice, according to Shastra and chanting the mantras, everything's right, you don't get that. That's not there. So the sin's not there. But still the reaction of the piety of having performed the yajna, you'll go to the heavenly planets, the animal go, that still remains. Then another side that is not mentioned in the Karmakanda, but it's mentioned in the Dharma Shastra, is the term monk saha. Mum means me, saha means you. So, I kill you this life, you kill me next life. Right? Means after we both get back from the heavenly planets, we're back here again, I'm going to be the horse, and you're going to be the king, and then you're going to be cutting off my head. Right? Does that make sense? So that's mentioned in the Dharma Shastra. So, therefore, someone who's actually intelligent doesn't bother. Because it's said that by being a vegetarian for 100 years and by performing an ashwamedha yajna for every year for 100 years, you get the same benefit. Right?
But fortunately, Indra's not worried about vegetarians. Probably because he knows who lives to 100 years anyway. So he doesn't have to. So when you're 99 years old and you're still going strong, then he might send Menaka to, you know, bring you a McDonald's burger or something, you know, who knows. Like that, yeah.
So why this particular type of sacrifice can be introduced in the beginning of Treta Yuga?
Why is it introduced in the beginning of Treta Yuga? That what Maharaj explained, that discussion was before, is because then the people aren't qualified to be Paramahamsas. They're still pious. Therefore, the Bhagavat culture is the proper culture of the human being. But if he's not quite qualified for that, means on the transcendental platform, but he has all piety, then the Vedic is what's used. In other words, the Bhagavat is the first option. Then after that, then in this order, then you get the, how you say, the Vedic. Then after that, the Pancharatra. But we'll notice that one would think, but the Pancharatra is higher than the Vedic, right? So why would it be? Because the normal thing, if we notice, is Treta means what? In Sanskrit, Treta is three. Dvapara is two. So whenever Krishna appears personally, because he appears at this junction between Kali Yuga and Dvapara Yuga, therefore the Yugas are switched. Otherwise, it's Satya Yuga, then they go into Pancharatra in the Dwapara Yuga, then it goes down into the Vedas, I mean down into the Vedic of the Yagyas, and then it goes into Kali Yuga, right? So normal what it is would be that in the Satya Yuga, means they have all the qualities, then when it drops one quarter, they perform Pancharatra, when it drops to half, then they do the Vedic. Then when it drops to a quarter, then they don't have qualifications for Pancharatric or Vedic. So only the Bhagavat can save them. Does that make sense? So that's the normal. But once in a day of Brahma, then the two switch. Right? So in the, this is in the 7th Manvantara, in the 28th Mahayuga, that junction between that Dwapara and that Kali, that's when that Mahayuga, they switch. Right? So we're looking at it like that, so we look at it there. But otherwise, than the normal, it switches, it's the other way around. So it would be the junction between the Dwapara and the Treta that Yagya would be introduced.
Is it the same principle applied for spiritual advancement?
It's the same for spiritual advancement.
It's like we start from the Bhagavad and we keep more. Then if it doesn't work, then you go for...
Yeah, well, it's not a matter of doesn't work. It doesn't fully engage. It means the thing we should do is just chant Hare Krishna and hear Bhagavatam and that. That's what we should be doing. If we can't do that, then we follow the rules of the Pancharatra. Right? If that doesn't fully engage our needs, then we introduce Nishkarm Karma Varnashram. If that doesn't work, then you introduce Sakam Karma. If that doesn't work, then you just be a pious guy that, you know, opens hospitals and gives in charity and feeds poor people and stuff like that. And if you can't do that, then you can become a Mayavadi. You know, like that. That's bottom of the line. You know, it's just end of the line. You can't do any of that, but then you can take up impersonal philosophy. Because at least then you stay out of the way of everybody. You don't do any nonsense. You know what I'm saying? You're not doing any good, but you're not doing any nonsense. The pious person at least is doing some material good. And then higher than that is the devotee who's doing material good and he's engaging himself in the spiritual. Then higher than that is he's engaging in the spiritual, but according to his own needs. Then higher than that, then it's according to the Lord's needs. Then higher than that, it's the Bhagavad. It's only done for Lord's pleasure. Does that make sense? Exactly, yes.
Maharaj, before you mentioned that if the people are vegetarian, they don't get sin. But Krishna in Bhagavad Gita says, even if you eat vegetables, but you don't offer it to me.
Yeah, okay. This sin means the point is in the Gita then is pointed out that Krishna says if you eat anything without offering to him, it's sin. We have two levels there. One is that the lower level, the sin is the principle is everything is eaten according to sacrifice. right? So even the vegetable has to be offered in sacrifice. Otherwise, it'd be some sin. But the sin of you know, killing the potato is, you know, doesn't compare to killing a cow. You know what I'm saying? So in this context, we weren't talking about it so much in there, because it says if anybody eats what they're supposed to, then there's no sin. But for the human being, then it's rightly pointed out, the human being must do everything according to sacrifice anyway. Right? So therefore, within the Varnashram system, then everybody is following sacrifice. So in some way or another, they're going to be offering their food, whether it's to Krishna or it's to through another form of Vedic sacrifice. Right? So it has to be offered. So if they don't, then even the vegetables, that's a sin. So there'll be a reaction, a small reaction, but there'll be a reaction. But then in the but on a higher principle, if it's not connected to Krishna, that's sin. And what's connected to Krishna, that's piety. So even material piety, if it's not connected to Krishna, is sinful. Does that make sense?
You also mentioned that in Satya Yuga is Bhagavad Dharma, and then in Treta it becomes Panchayata, and Dwapara it becomes Vedic.
No, because it's switched, because you have Satya, Dwapara, Treta, Kali. That's when it goes that way. Dwapara Yuga is always Pancharatra, Treta Yuga is always Yajna. But just the two of them switch in this Mahayuga.
So Maharaj, why doesn't Bhagavad Dharma apply in different ages? Because if you can deliberate the people of Kali Yuga...
Why doesn't it apply? The Bhagavad, it always applies.
Pancharatra and Vedic?
But why are they there? Because... you're here, how many people are interested in Krishna consciousness? Right? It's available right now. Everybody on the planet can chant Hare Krishna, go back to Godhead. Who's doing it? So, therefore, on these other yugas, then people are born there because that's what they're interested in. Right? It's available. You can always chant. You have to chant the Lord's name in any of the processes. In meditation, you have to chant mantra. In yajna, you have to chant mantra. In pancharatra, you have to chant mantra. Samkirtana, chanting mantra. So it's always there. But the point is we're not taking advantage of it. So it's worked into the other systems because people are interested in piety. They're interested in all these things. Let me say. Right there, you said everyone's Paramahamsa. So Dwapara Yuga, then it's Paramahamsa, but in its within its ritualized form, because you're addressing the conditioned nature more. So it's Ekayana. Then after that, then it's more general. Then it's the Vedic. Then after that, then Kali Yuga. It's you know a bit wild. Is that okay? Anything else on this? Or? Okay. King Pariksit's promise to battle even the denizens of heaven in defense of Dharma was not a vain boast. For by the grace of the Lord, a devotee can accomplish anything. The Lord empowers him to do so. Purport. The assurances and challenges made by Maharaj Pariksit are never exaggerations of his real power. The Maharaj said that even the denizens of heaven could not escape his stringent government if they were violators of religious principles. He was not falsely proud. For a devotee of the Lord is equally as powerful as the Lord, or sometimes more powerful by his grace. And any promise made by a devotee, though it may be ordinarily very difficult to fulfill, is properly executed by the grace of the Lord. Right? So that's the point, is that the devotee is working for Krishna's service. He's not working for his own service. Therefore, then he has that power. Right? If you're representing the Lord, then the Lord's power is there. So to that degree that they represent, to that degree the power is there. Right? So he could go to other planets. Right? We saw Prithumaras was chasing Bhumi all over the place in the universe. So it's not that it can't be done like that. Any questions on this? Yes.
More powerful.
Because of the devotion means here is then you're also alluding to Well, two things. You could allude to the social, but also just by rasa. It means Arjuna technically is more powerful than Krishna because they're Kurus, not Yadavas. They're Sun Dynasty, not Moon Dynasty. Right? In the Battle of Kurukshetra, then Arjuna is the chariot. You know, I mean, is the warrior, and Krishna is the chariot driver. So like that, they can take. Krishna was the messenger for Yudhishthira, so that puts Yudhishthira in the senior position. You know, Maharaj Ugrasena is the king of Dwarka, not Krishna. So you can socially, but more important than that, what's also is being is that Mother Yashoda is controlling Krishna. She feeds him, she dresses him, bathes him, you know, he does what she wants him to do. You know, that Mother Yashoda and the senior gopis, and they're there and they ask Krishna to dance, and they're clapping their hands and he's dancing for them. So this is more powerful because of affection is more powerful. You see in the wedding ceremony, Gopal Bhatta Goswami, there's a run of, I think it's in the Driti Homa, there's a run of, no, it's in the Panigrahanam. There's a verse that says, be the Lord of your husband's, this is being said to the wife, be the Lord of your husband's father, Lord of your husband's mother, your Lord of husband's, like this. It doesn't mean that she comes in and she starts, you know, wielding the rolling pin here. It means that by her good qualities and affection towards the other family member, she controls them. Because that's the actual control. The woman controls the family members by affection. Therefore, the family works for her. But when she tries to do it by the modern methods of just because she's a woman, then you lose everything because no one's interested. But by affection, no one minds being controlled. You know, probably gives the example of, forget what it was. It was the viceroy, or sometimes you hear it as a high court judge, sometimes as the viceroy, sometimes as the prime minister. But whatever, I don't remember what it is. But it was somebody, basically in the position to rule a country, you know. And some very large person was waiting to meet them, and a long time passed and nothing was happening. So the person, out of impatience, just walked into the room where this, you know, personality was. And there was this prime minister or whatever down on his hands and knees with his grandchild on his back telling him, okay, now go here, now go there. Right? So he runs the country, but he's run around by this little kid. You know? Does that make sense? So that's the point. The Vedic culture is actually meant for proper social interaction. So that's where the real power is. Just because someone has physical power like this, the king, it's necessary to keep people in line. But what people are looking for is that emotional interaction where they respect somebody. They have that, and then that's what. Because all relationships are based on shantaras, which means appreciation. Like that. So that has to be there. As long as it's there, it maintains something. If someone works on the external, on position in relationship, means there is no appreciation. You can't appreciate somebody and then pull rank on them. You can't do that. So, in other words, it's impersonalism that the whole modern idea of social interaction is being projected and therefore breaking down. The more they liberalize, the more it's breaking down, because the more they're taking into impersonalism instead of personalism. You only consider yourself, you know, or you consider someone else at the expense of this person. Right? The man is there, he has, you know, a knife to the lady's throat. The policeman is there 3 feet away with a gun pointing straight at his head, he could easily kill him. But because the guy's just escaped from the insane asylum, the psychiatrist that takes care of him is there. No, no, don't shoot. You know, I know the guy. I'll talk him out of it. And so in his talking, then the guy gets upset or something, or somebody does something, sneezes, and the guy kills the girl. So we save the madman, who's useless to society anyway, and is violent and should be killed. And then an innocent girl is killed because the psychiatrist wants to save. And this is going on. This is real. and this was not a, you know. So that's the problem with the modern. It's not real relationships, it's impersonal. Because if it's real relationships, then everybody's put into their position, and then what's their natural relationship? Madman with knife at the throat of girl should be removed. You know? But, you know, that's not there. You know, it just doesn't work. So that's the problem with the modern, is that they don't actually know what relationship is, so therefore it seems that it's personal. They use nice, sweet words, but actually it's just, you know, a snake with a jewel on its head. But that looks good, but, you know, you get close, you'll be killed. Yes?
There is affection in Arjuna and Krishna's relationship.
There's affection in Arjuna and Krishna, yes. That's why, as a joke, then Arjuna will call Krishna Yadava. It's out of affection. You know, he's his friend, he's dearer to him than life. Right? Because we can see at the end of the at the end of the Bhagavatam here, then the Pandavas, now it's without Krishna, then there's no meaning to their existence. So now they'll leave. Right? This is 17, isn't it? Isn't the next chapter Pandavas retire timely, should be. No? Oh, it's the previous chapter. We've already done this. Okay, yeah, they've already gone, and now we're into Pariket. Okay. Does that make sense? It's interesting. Is there anything else on this? Okay. Purport 18. Contending philosophies of causation and the humble vision of a devotee. Purport. There are many theoretical philosophers in the world who put forward their own theories of cause and effect, especially about the cause of suffering and its effect on different living beings. Generally, there are six great philosophers: Karnada, the author of Vaisheshika philosophy; Gotama, the author of logic; Patanjali, the author of mystic yoga; Kapila, the author of Shankya philosophy; Jaimini, the author of Karma Mimamsa; and Vyasadeva, the author of Vedanta Darshana. I think this is going in order from bottom to top of the philosophies, right? Because Kannada, Vaisheshika, that means that's the atomic theory. Everything is just atoms. Atoms are eternal, so it's dead. But they combine together and dissipate in different forms. But the atoms are the same. An earth atom is always an earth atom. Sometimes it may be in the form of this brick. Sometimes it's the form of dust. You know what I'm saying? Sometimes the body is there, it's also made out of earth, and then sometimes it moves back into the earth, and then we're pushing up daisies. Right? Does that make some sense? Something like that. I don't know if that's very American, that one. You know, you're down, they bury you, and then from the bottom you're pushing the daisies up. You know, so. Does that make some sense? So that's his theory. So the modern physicists, they're actually Vaisheshika. All they see is atoms. So it's the lowest of all the interpretations of the Vedic literature. Higher than that, then, is Gotama, logic, that you logically look at things and try to work things out. Higher than that, then, is Shankya, where logic, you just look at it, but it's not, you'll classify it, but according to logic. But Shankya means you're going to classify it actually toward the elements of the universe. It's already created like that. So then that's why they act in this way. Logic does, this acts like this, that acts like that. Right? But Shankya means it acts like that because it's been created like that. This has been created like this. So naturally, in other words, you're already farther ahead. If you're starting from atoms, you got a long way to go. Then you have to get from atoms into the things, into their nature, into... So you're not going to get very far. You won't get out of the material world with these lower ones. Then higher than that is yoga. It means you already have all the elements of Shankya, but you're using that now to focus on the Lord, right, in meditation. Like that. But still, it's there. Karma Mimamsa, then you're actually active, because all these other ones, you're not active with society. So even though it's not directed at the Lord while Patanjali is, but Patanjali, it's aimed at the impersonal form of the Lord. right? You see the Lord, but you want to merge in the Lord. So, as we pointed out, impersonalists are lower than karmakandis, right? So, like that. Plus, they're not active with society while the others are. That's why they're not active. They'll make too much trouble. So, therefore, all these other people go to the forest, right? Like, impersonalists should be in the forest, because then at least the animals don't care. You know, you're not going to disturb the tigers and all that. You know? So then, but karma mimamsa, then you're active, you're pious, you're doing something positive, you're actually maintaining the universe, if nothing else. The rain's happening because you're performing sacrifice. But still, it's defective because the Lord is not involved in there as the supreme cause. And the actual understanding of the eternal nature of the soul as servant of God is not there. He understands the soul's eternal. Right? Vaishyasika, there is no soul. Right, so it's not very important, this one. You know, Patanjali, the soul's merging. Right, so it's also Jaimini. At least the soul stays individual and eternally. He can be good at piety, is always eternal. He can always do pious acts, so always you'll be enjoying. That's his idea. But the problem is with every action, there's always a defect. The smoke covers fire. So even you do everything, there's going to be something wrong. Nriga did so many yagyas, it's not even, you can't even count it. Like grains of sand on the beach. But he did one thing wrong and he ended up as a lizard in a well. You know, this great, unlimited pious credits, who knows where that will take him. But he's a lizard in the well. And that's the defect that is finessed in that. So then with Vyasadeva, then you actually have the scriptures. You know, what they're applied properly in connection with God consciousness. Right? Does that make sense? Okay. Although the bull and the personality of religion and the cow, the personality of earth, knew perfectly well that the personality of Kali was the direct cause of their sufferings, still as devotees of the Lord they knew well also that without the sanction of the Lord no one could inflict trouble upon them. According to the Padma Purana, our present trouble is due to the fructifying of seedling sins. But even these seedling sins also gradually fade away by execution of pure devotional service. Thus, even if the devotees see the mischief mongers, they do not accuse them for their suffering inflicted. They take it for granted that the mischief monger is made to act by some indirect cause, and therefore they tolerate the sufferings, thinking them to be God-given in small doses, or otherwise the sufferings should have been greater. So by devotional means you perform the activity according to karma, it should be the full amount, 100%. Because we're taking up devotional service and we're reforming the consciousness, therefore it's reduced, right? Punishment is to reform consciousness. If consciousness is already reformed, there's no need. Does that make sense? Like Kali should be killed, but because he surrendered, therefore he's banished. Does that make sense? So automatically, when there's reformation of consciousness, there is reduction of punishment. Does that make sense? So in the karmakanda system, that is generally not so great because of the desire. So only with really good qualities could you actually perform that. Therefore, the Brahmins, much of the time, there's no corporal punishment for them. Because they can, because of their good qualities, they can understand the wrong and correct it. They can be banished, as we see Ashwatthama. But there will be no capital punishment, corporal punishment. You won't take their wealth and everything. As they are, they will be banished. Does that make sense? You know? Oh, political party. Okay. Does that make sense? So the whole point is because the devotee therefore is a Brahmin by consciousness, therefore the reactions are reduced. Does that make sense? And because they're doing it for Krishna, the actual desire for it, the polluted consciousness, is removed, so the whole cycle is being destroyed. So to that degree that it's affected, to that degree it's actually removed. Does that make sense? So the devotee understands it's being reduced. The Lord's so kind to reduce. So even though we think it's so bad, it could be worse. Right? Does that make sense? Yes.
So in the same way that if we were brought up in meat-eating families, the karma that we... If we're brought up in families given meat by our parents,
yeah,
the karma that we had from this, when we get to the point where we sort of just trying to serve Krishna, then karma is finished.
Yeah, then that's all reduced. Anyway, up to the age of, depending on whether it's 13 or 16, that reaction goes to your parents anyway.
I stopped when I was 13.
Yeah, but I'm just saying it means, in other words, there's two times given in ages. Yeah. 13, when you get your karma, yourself. 13 and 16. 16 is the natural form, like that. That's because at 16, then you become adult, so then you're responsible, you understand you're responsible for your actions, right? But you can move up this thing of where you are interested in result and you endeavor for your own actions if you're involved between men and women. So then at 13, in other words, boys and girls who at 13 are socially active amongst the opposite sex, they get the reactions themselves. It doesn't go to the parents. To that degree that they're surrender to the parents, to that degree it goes to them. But otherwise, then they're getting their own reactions now, because that's what it means, because you know what's going on. Does that make sense?
Yeah, so then this is like really messed up in today's civilization, because you get like 5-year-olds that smoke.
Yeah, but still that goes to the parents. That'll go to the parents, but at 13, because at 12, then you start to open up to what's going on around you. So at that age, then you know what's going on around you, plus you're involved in these activities by your own choice. You know what I'm saying? Because here, your parents are feeding you, that's what they're feeding you. It's not necessarily your choice.
So but even kids that are have left home before 10 and stuff?
Still, it would go to whoever they're responsible to. So then in this case, if they're a kid on the street, while they're on the street, it would go to the authorities of the state. Whoever would be in charge of the kids, because otherwise, why are they on the street? They shouldn't be on the street. The government should be taking care of them, you know. And so then if they put them in a remedial home, then whoever's in charge of the remedial home gets the reaction. Or if they're in a boarding school, whoever is in the boarding school, they get the reaction. They're just like the boys that are here. If they're here, it goes to us. If they're at home, it goes to their parents. Like that. You know, so it's like that. It's whoever is your authority, they are the one that get it. That's why the authority is always just like the reactions of the wife go to the husband. You know, the reactions of the citizen go to the king. The reactions of the student goes to the teacher, or the disciple to the guru. Like that. So it's just they go somewhere. You know, somebody's got to take the. So with responsibility comes the reaction. Everyone wants to be responsible, but you'll notice in the modern thing, everyone wants to have authority, but no one wants responsibility. That's why the committee is so important, because a committee can very successfully take authority, but skip out on responsibility. Because if you go to the committee and say, this is wrong, everybody in the committee can say, well, it wasn't me. I didn't vote for it. I abstained. You know what I'm saying? So it's cheating. Because in the Vedic, you do have committees. It's called ministers. But then there's a king. He takes the responsibility. He made the decision. So they will get the reaction, but the point is that socially, that's why people feel unprotected. Because a committee can't protect anyone. Does that make sense? Like that. Committee is very useful in getting people together and think. Those who will take the responsibility, they come together as a committee. Right? And then they will individually take that responsibility to see that it's done. But they're taking the responsibility. Does that make sense? But where the committee is the authority only, and it doesn't take the responsibility, that can't function. So all these modern things who come up, you know, like that. It's just, it's all just to break down, as I mentioned before, to break down the position of the, you know, bull of religion. Like that. Is that okay? So in other words, we see that whatever happens to us is a reduction in this, and though Krishna is very kind to us that he's reduced it. And whoever is inflicting this upon us, they are simply an instrument. Right? The modes of nature, somehow or another Krishna's arrangement, that they're doing it, but they're not actually the cause of our suffering. They're only the instrument for it. We're the cause of our own suffering, actually. Does that make sense? Yeah.
I was thinking, if someone gives you trouble and you have a friendly relationship, then you can work it out. But if you don't have a friendly relationship, there's no trust there, and sometimes you tend to bottle it, and don't feel like you can, get worked out with the person is unnatural, or should you confront it?
Is it natural? You could all hear? No. You were saying is that if you have a relationship with somebody and some problem comes up, because the relationship you can work things out. You don't have a relationship, you can't work it out. Tendency is to bottle it up. So is that natural, or should you be approaching them and working it out and like that? What the recommendation is giving here is something completely different. It bottled up means you feel you're wrong and this person is the cause of that. But when you understand it's due to my previous actions, therefore the reaction has come to me through this person. The person isn't actually part of your problem. Your problem is with yourself. You've got to work it out with yourself. Why do I have these material needs and desires that cause me this problem? Right? Right? The IRS is banging on your door. Right? But why are they banging on your door? Because you don't pay your taxes. Why are you not paying your taxes? Because you're cheating. Or you don't know math. Something is there. So, therefore, they're giving you trouble. But it's not the officer that's giving you the trouble, or even the department. You're giving yourself trouble because you're not following the system. Right? So, therefore, you got to work it out with yourself. Well, I either have to learn some math, or I got to stop cheating. Then the problem's not there. They're only banging your door because you're not doing it right. If you're doing it right, why are they bother you? Right? Right? The nasty dog is just sitting there on his chain. You don't go near him, he doesn't bother you. You go over him because he's chained up and you think, and you get close and like this thing. And then when the chain breaks, then you can't blame the dog. I mean, it's natural. I saw it once. There was a three-year-old kid, right? Little girl, three-year-old girl. And they had one of these pit bulls, right? Nastiest, most vicious dogs. Chained up, right? And the kid would come with this big, long, thin stick and come up to the dog and just sit there. Dog's over there. And just, with the stick and go, whack! And then just sit there and the dog, like this, like that. And, I was somehow staying outside the room and the dog was out on the veranda, like that. And all day that's what the kid would do, But heaven forbid that dog should ever get loose. Because the dog's as big as the kid. It's like but, so that's the thing, is that there's no need to bother, So you don't bother, you won't be bothered. You don't do things wrong, you won't get a reaction. So that's the thing, is that the devotee sees that there's nobody giving me trouble. It's just myself due to my own material desires in the past and possibly some remnant of that at the present. That's why this reaction's coming. Because otherwise, if I didn't have any problem with it, it wouldn't bother me. Right? The IRS comes banging on your door. You're not cheating. You're not doing anything wrong. You're not, what is this? Why are you coming to my door? You wouldn't care. Yeah, here's all the stuff, look at it. No, I turned it all in, maybe, it didn't get there, there's a mistake. And they'll look at it and say, oh, it's all in order, and go away. So we're only bothered by those things that actually we still have in the heart. Otherwise, they don't bother us. Right? Somebody makes a comment, we laugh. The same comment's made to someone else, and, oh, why are they saying that, and this and that, and you know what I'm saying? And sometimes even with yourself, the same situation, the same comment, one time it bothers you, one time it doesn't bother you. So that just means that, that one is coming and going. You're working on it, or it's not so much now and again, and it'll come up. So then you have to work on it. So in other words, what you're seeing is a reflection of your own consciousness, because it's your perception. You perceive through that, so you're only getting reflection of your perception. Like that. But that's tattva. Rasa is still you interact, and not all you.
You know. Your service is being pampered, and you just tolerate it and wait for it to clear by rectifying your own consciousness?
One is you'd have to work on the consciousness, what is there, why this is coming up, why it's bothering. Take advantage of other things. At the same time, because it's your service, then you should try to clear that the service is running, the obstacle is cleared. That should be there. But you don't see that there's any particular person is the cause of that. No, that's there, you know. But at the same time, we work. So both things are going on. We're not seeing the person as a problem, but at the same time as we're working on that, correcting it. Does that make sense?
Why there are reaction to guru for karma of disciple? Although guru has taught everything, and because of all choice of disciple.
Because the responsibility. Whoever is responsible, then they're taking. Because you have authority, therefore there's responsibility. So that means reactions then go to whoever's responsible. Right? Right? Just like the animal sacrifice is there. Who's responsible for the animal sacrifice? Right? The yajaman and the priest. If there's no yajaman, then there's no priest, then there's no yajna. Right? Everybody else is just there because these two persons are doing it. So they get the reaction.
How come the disciple gets some reactions, though?
Because he's independent from guru.
So
that degree you're independent from guru, to that degree you're getting reactions. But at the same time, as if you're not independent from guru, you're not doing anything that will create reactions anyway. So then you're completely dependent on guru, so everything, reactions go to the guru, but there aren't any. And because you're independent from the guru, then you do things that are wrong, to that degree you get also. So it works both ways. Yes?
So what's a good reaction to go to the guru?
A portion. A portion goes. Yeah, that portion is there. You know, just like a chaste wife protects the husband. Just by her chastity, the husband is protected. People can't bother him because he's protected by a chaste woman. Right? Does that make sense? So some of the good, just like the king of the state, if he's maintaining the kingdom nicely, the Brahmins and all that, then he gets 1/6 of anything that they do. If he's protecting them. If he's not protecting them, then he only gets the bad. So if you're taking tax, you get 1/6 of the good and 1/6 of the bad. You're taking the tax, then you don't protect, you get 100%. Bad. No good.
Why are we doing things in Krishna consciousness anyway? There is no piety anyway.
There is no piety when we do, but that's if you are not looking, performing it for a pious result. You know, so it's like, say, okay, I'll do this service, I'll do it really nicely, and if I do it nicely, then they'll give me facility. I'll get a place to live, I'll get this and that. So then, in the consciousness, if that's a motive, then that is piety, you're getting that. But if it's not, you're just doing it because of service, and they give me some facility, great, I don't have to look elsewhere for it. Then that element's not there, then purely spiritual would be there. So it depends on kind. That's why sakam means you're trying to get the spiritual and the material piety at the same time. Nishkam means you're only interested in the spiritual. Right. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. So then we'll end here. We'll continue tomorrow with this purport 22. Srila Prabhupada ki, Sanarita Bhaktivrinda ki, Chanitai Gaura Premarandi.